Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, there are stories galore about the Ukraine war. Sorry to rhyme there. I'll try to keep that under control. But one question I think it's possible to retain in the minds of most Americans, which has been stimulated, so to speak, by some of the rhetoric coming out of Washington. Why is the U.S. supplying arms and intel to Ukraine? Now, might be out of the goodness of our hearts, and the felonant has indicated our hearts may be running out of goodness. But au contraire, mon frère, it's not out of the goodness of our hearts. December 5th, 1994, at a ceremony in Budapest, Ukraine joined Belarus and Kazakhstan in giving up their nuclear arsenals in return for security guarantees from the United States, as well as the UK, France, China, and Russia. According to the BBC, the missiles belonged to the Soviet Union, not to its newly independent former republics, but a third of the USSR's nuclear stockpile was located on Ukrainian soil. Handing over the weapons was regarded as a significant moment. Quote, "The pledges on security assurances that we have given these three nations underscore our commitment to the independence, the sovereignty, and the territorial integrity of these states," unquote, President, at the time, Bill Clinton. And now there's a new development in that conflict, not widely reported, but Greg Sargent in the New Republic reports it. The State Department, I'm quoting him now, has quietly terminated a contract that was in the process of transferring evidence of alleged Russian abductions of Ukrainian children, a potential war crime, to law enforcement officials in Europe. That's according to two people familiar with the situation. The award could make it harder, or the next award could make it harder, to continue tracking down the kidnapped Ukrainian kids and complicate efforts to seek accountability for the abductions. Well, who would want that? That's according to one of the sources with direct knowledge of the ongoing operation. One of Ukraine's central demands for any peace deal is the return of Ukrainian children who have allegedly been the victims of a Russian program of coerced adoption. It's the best kind, isn't it, really? Russia has claimed this program is a humanitarian one that benevolently adopts Ukrainian kids and makes them Russian citizens. But under the previous president of the United States, the State Department strongly condemned it as, quote, "the forcible transfer and deportation of Ukraine's children to camps promoting indoctrination in Russia." As the New York Times reported recently, Russia has not just transferred children from Ukrainian orphanages to Russian camps. It has also taken kids whose relatives want them back. The Times noted that the abductees number in the thousands, saying this mass transfer of children is a potential war crime. The contract is extremely sensitive. It involves the tracking of some of these abducted children. The State Department, under the contract, which was initially granted several years ago, State Department has been underwriting work by the Yale School of Public Health's Humanitarian Research Lab. Well, who needs one of those? It has been using highly sophisticated tools like satellite imagery and analysis of open source technology and biometric data to identify and locate the abducted kids. But no more. But Ukraine wishes it had those nukes back. Hello, welcome to the show.
darling, won't you take my hand? Let me hold you close, let's have a dance.
From Santa Monica, California, home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this particular edition of the show. And now,
looks like must close.
And of course, there's more about Elon. Gotta be. According to Tesla delivery agents, Cybertruck deliveries are on hold. Much like takeoffs for the Starship. There's a containment hold, so-called. Many owners are reporting trims flying off the supposedly bulletproof electric truck. That's according to electric.com. Many Tesla Cybertruck buyers are taking to forums, or fora, and social media, or mediums, to report that their deliveries are being pushed back. 8 Cybertruck buyers waiting for deliveries reported the delay on the Cybertruck Owners Club forum. Many more on X. That's cute. And Facebook. Most are being told by Tesla delivery specialists that there is a containment hold on all Cybertruck deliveries. That generally occurs, a containment hold, when an automaker finds something wrong with newly produced vehicles and wants to hold deliveries back to fix the issue so it can avoid recalling vehicles when they're in customers' hands. I wouldn't put them in my hands. My feet, maybe. In this case, most Cybertruck buyers are unaware of the issue. One buyer shared an image from Tesla's service app. I didn't know they had one of those. That must be new. Where a Tesla rep said that the issue was due to the Cybertruck's, quote, can trail trim. That's decorative trim that covers the roof ledge of a vehicle. Despite the fact that Tesla has claimed that the Cybertruck is bulletproof and made out of an exoskeleton, the electric vehicle's build is actually much closer to a traditional unibody system than rather than an exoskeleton. Most of the visible body parts, which would be part of the chassis in an exoskeleton build, are actually trims attached to the body. With thumbtacks? No. But in some cases, they are extremely flimsy trims. That's a good name for a band, isn't it? It's previously been reported that Tesla recalled 11,000 Cybertrucks due to some trims detaching while being driven. That's entertaining. That recall was in June of last year. The problem may be coming back. Images of the Cybertruck's front plate being held by glue. I said glue has recently been circulating on social media. The previous recall also mentioned a problem with adhesive resulting in trims detaching. In the case of the Cybertruck's Cantrail trim, Tesla's service manual points to brackets holding the top part of the trims. The hold on Cybertruck deliveries appears to have started recently, as some delivery appointments have been canceled. Buyers have been told, well, they've yet to be told when they'll be able to pick up their vehicles. I think they're being shot into space as we speak. And also, in the vein of Musk love, this from Politico, Chris Young, the former GOP field organizer, who was originally brought in to advise Musk during the Trump campaign and has turned into Musk's right hand on all things Washington, from penetrating the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau to handling personal logistics. Well, upon Musk's requests, Young procured a massive TV for Musk's office in the Eisenhower Executive Office Building. Why? According to a person familiar with the situation, granted anonymity, so he could play video games. And as you may recall from a previous edition of this show, cheat at them. Sounds like Musk love. Now here's Ralph with a ditty written by Claude.
AI to the rescue, smarter every day. From work to play, it leads the way. Innovation, creation, it's here to stay. AI makes life better. Hip hip hooray.
Nice reading. The tendency of AI models to hallucinate, basically making stuff up, isn't sufficient to disqualify them from use in healthcare settings, according to the British tech journal The Register. No less than 25 technology and medical experts from respected academic and healthcare organizations, not to mention a web search ad giant, have taken it upon themselves to catalog and analyze medical hallucinations in mainstream foundation models, with an eye toward formulating better rules for working with AI in healthcare settings. Don't you feel better now? Here, take two of these. Their work, published in a prepared or preprint paper titled Medical Hallucinations in Foundation Models and Their Impact on Healthcare, and in a supporting GitHub repository, argues that harm mitigation strategies need to be developed. These hallucinations use domain-specific terms and appear to present coherent logic, which can make them difficult to recognize. Sound like my friends. The authors set out to create a taxonomy of medical hallucination, which differs, they claim, from erroneous AI answers in less consequential contexts. Quote, medical hallucinations exhibit two distinct features compared to their general purpose counterparts. First, they arise within specialized tasks, such as diagnostic reasoning, therapeutic planning, or interpretation of lab findings, where inaccuracies have immediate implications for patient care. Second, these hallucinations frequently use domain-specific terms and appear to present coherent logic which can make them difficult to recognize without expert scrutiny. Unquote. Well, how about artificial expert scrutiny? You ever think of that? The authors also looked at the frequency with which such hallucinations appear. Among various different tests, they evaluated the clinical reasoning abilities of five general-purpose large language models on three targeted tasks. The tasks were ordering events chronologically, lab data interpretation, and differential diagnosis generation. That's the process of assessing symptoms and exploring possible diagnoses. Models were rated on a scale of no risk, 0 to 5, for catastrophic. You're welcome. The results were not great, reports the Register. Some models fared better than others. Diagnosis prediction consistently exhibited the lowest overall hallucination rates across all models. But tasks demanding precise factual recall and temporal integration presented significantly higher hallucination frequencies. What's the frequency, Kenneth? Yeah, I'll ask your dad about that one. The findings, authors say, challenge the assumption that diagnostic tasks require complex inference that large language models are less able to handle. Quote, instead, our results suggest that current architectures may possess a relative strength in pattern recognition and diagnostic inference within medical case reports, but struggle with the more fundamental tasks of accurately extracting and synthesizing detailed factual and temporal information directly from clinical text. Unquote. Who needs that? Claude, product of Anthropic and OpenAI's O1, had the lowest hallucination rates in the three tested tasks. These findings, the researchers argue, suggest high-performing models show promise for diagnostic inference, but the continued occurrence of risk errors rated significant, 2, or considerable, 3, means even the best-performing models have to be carefully monitored for clinical tasks and have a human in the loop. Or hope. The researchers also conducted a survey of 75 medical practitioners about their use of AI tools. There's no going back, it seems. 40 use these tools daily, 9 use them several times per week, 13 use them a few times a month, 13 reported rare or no usage. The paper added 30 respondents expressed high levels of trust in AI model output. That lack of skepticism from 40% of the survey participants is all the more surprising considering that 91.8% have encountered medical hallucinations in their clinical practice, and 84% have considered that hallucination they've experienced could potentially affect patient health. And now, let's pay a visit to the irony department. It's located within News of the Warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
A new four-lane highway cutting through tens of thousands of acres of protected Amazon rainforest is being built in the Brazilian, or near the Brazilian city of Belém, for the express purpose of routing attendees to a climate summit, COP30, in that city. It's designed to ease traffic to the city, which will host more than 50,000 people, including world leaders, at the conference this November. That's according to the BBC. The state government touts the highway's sustainable credentials. Some locals and conservationists are outraged at the environmental impact. The Amazon, as you may know, plays a vital role in absorbing carbon for the world. Carbon for the world. And providing biodiversity. Many say this deforestation contradicts the very purpose of a climate summit. Yeah, many say that. Along the partially built road, lush rainforest towers on either side, a reminder of what was once there. Logs are piled high in the cleared land, which stretches more than 8 miles through the rainforest into Belém, in order to ease traffic into a climate summit. News of the warm. Don't you feel warm? Now, news of the godly. A former priest with a history of child sex offenses, that's a history, who told an undercover police officer how to abuse boys, has been jailed for 8.5 years, according to the BBC. Timothy Gardner, 53 years old, same age as Elon, also showed a persistent disregard for a sexual harm prevention order by hiding his internet history and not registering usernames, bank cards, emails, and memory cards with police. He admitted encouraging or assisting the commission of child sex offense and multiple breaches of orders. His close associate was Gardner, of Bishop Robert Byrne. He resigned from the Catholic Diocese of Hexham and Newcastle amid serious concerns over his handling of reports about this priest, Timothy Gardner, way back in December of 2022. Gardner was convicted of 11 offenses of making indecent images of children way back in 2014. As a result, he had to register any names, aliases, bank accounts, and addresses with police. He was later made subject to a sexual harm prevention order, which demanded that he make known to officers any devices capable of accessing the internet or storing digital images, and not delete any search history or use browsers with an incognito mode. In June of 2022, Gardner used a profile called Family Doctor and the fake name Matt to make contact with an adult male, which was actually an undercover police officer. This, according to what the court heard, as well as the unregistered names being a breach of his order, Gardner went on to discuss, quote, how to abuse a child with penetrative sexual activity, unquote. The judge said Gardner was posing as a doctor and boasted of having met other pedophiles in real life. She said he went into graphic detail about how the man could molest and rape his foster sons, providing advice and encouragement and suggesting ways to groom them and normalize sexual abuse. Sounds like a nice guy. I'd like to confess to him, and vice versa. Father Marcelino de Andre Nunez, a priest of the Legionaries of Christ, and former secretary of Marcial Messiel, was arrested in Spain and released subject to restrictions, accused of abusing 5 underage girls at a school where he served as a primary and secondary school chaplain. Maciel, the founder of the Legionaries of Christ, you may recall, sexually abused at least 60 minors, most between the ages of 11 and 16, according to a report issued by that very organization way back in December of 2019. According to several statements released by the school in recent days, Spain's national police arrested the priest beginning of the month, initially accused him of sexually abusing 1 female student. Upon learning of the events, the school activated its safe environment protocol for cases of sexual abuse reported against a Legionary of Christ. Within hours of informing parents of the arrest, 4 more complaints were received, and the school sent a new communication to parents responding to main questions received during that period. The school explained the priest arrived at the school September 2022 to fill a vacancy, and he presented a certificate stating he had no criminal record for sexual offenses. The school stated the priest was hired despite his known ties to the founder of Regnum Christi and the Legionaries of Christ, Marcial Messiel, quote, because there was no history of inappropriate behavior against minors that would prevent him from carrying out his work in an educational center. Father De Andres is the author of numerous books in Spanish, including Give Him Wings, More Than 100 Ways to Love. News of the Godly.
It's a beautiful morning. It's a wonderful life. Yeah, it's a beautiful morning. It's a wonderful life. So maybe you can tell me why I'm still not satisfied. I've got everything I need. I got nothing to hide. Yeah, I got everything I need. I got nothing to hide. It's a mystery to me why I'm still not satisfied. I've seen the Mona Lisa, I've been the Big Mamu, I've laughed until I cried, sackcloth and ashes, 10,000 naps, there's not a lot I have not tried. I don't understand why I'm still not satisfied. The side. Yeah, I've been up on the mountain. Lord, I've seen the other side. But seeing's not believing, and I'm still not satisfied. Colorado's on my mind. Yeah, I live in Tennessee, but Colorado's on my mind. But my heart's in Louisiana, and I'm still not satisfied. Yeah, my heart's in Louisiana, and I'm sure not satisfied. I just can't be satisfied. I just can't be satisfied. I just can't be satisfied. No, I just can't be satisfied.
Direct from the weekend White House, the whitest White House anywhere, this is your favorite president with another fresh edition of Truth Social Audio, brought to you by Trump Bread, the whitest white bread anywhere. So the fake news is getting more fake and less news every day. Now they keep attacking me for saying that Canada should be the 51st state. Of course, they're ignoring the vast majority of Canadians who would love to have the honor of living in a state even huger than Texas. Who wouldn't want that? You can bet everyone in Rhode Island would trade with them in a New York heartbeat. The few loudmouths up north who feed the fakers are clearly motivated by a continuing desire to rip off the United States despite any tariffs we might or might not, or might again decide to bestow on them. But Canada is not the only example of people drawing lines on a map that mean nothing, I'm proud to announce today that we're welcoming as the 52nd state, the state of Australia, where someone drew a line down the ocean and suddenly their country. That ends here. My good friend Mel Gibson tells me Australians would love to be part of a country that means something in the world instead of being a backwater that you can't find on the map with a telescope. And imagine a part of the United States that has real live kangaroos. China doesn't match that anytime soon. Of course, unlike Greenland and Panama, Australians already speak a kind of English, so we can fire all the teachers we'd otherwise need. And America would finally have what it's needed since anyone can remember. Reefs, the kind of people would pay real money to visit. The Great American Reef is only a signature away. And as for the naysayers and the always fakers, you can embellish your horrible resumes with an assignment to cover America's very own outback. And of course, since Australia gets way too much American money for military and other assistance, that money suddenly flows back to where it can do the most good, subsidizing tax cuts bigger than anybody has ever seen. I spell it win-win. And now MAGA means Make Australia Great Again. And Mel Gibson could get us that so-called country at a great price. Take it from me, or from him. That's it for this time. Next week, maybe New Zealand too. Bye.
Trump Social Audio is also brought to you by Trump Juices, squeezed like no one has ever seen. So long. From Santa Monica, this is Liz Show, and now...
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Microplastics. Think about it. Will you think about it?
Yes, I will.
Enough said.
Lot for him to think about this week. Microplastics have been found almost everywhere that scientists have looked for them. Now, according to research published in the American Chemical Society's journal Environment and Health, bits of plastic are present in the filtered solutions used for medical intravenous infusions. The researchers estimated that thousands of plastic particles could be delivered directly to a person's bloodstream from a single 8.5-ounce bag of infusion fluid. In clinical settings, IV infusions are packaged in individual plastic pouches. You may have seen this. And they deliver water, electrolytes, nutrients, or medicine to patients. Or plastics. The base of these infusions is a saline solution that contains filtered water and enough salt to match the content of human blood. Research from the 1970s suggests IV fluid bags can contain solid particles. Few scientists have followed up on what those particles are made of, but three colleagues suspected that these particles could be microplastics that, upon infusion, would enter the recipient's bloodstream and potentially cause negative health effects. They set out to analyze the types and amounts of particles in commercial IV fluid bags. They discovered that the two brands of saline that they encountered contained microplastic particles made from polypropylene, the same material as the bags, which suggests that the bags shed microplastics into the solutions. They estimated each bag of infusion fluid could deliver about 7,500 microplastics directly into the bloodstream. So you don't have to inject. And this figure rose to about 25,000 particles to treat dehydration, or 52,000 for abdominal surgery, because that requires multiple IV bags. The researchers recommended keeping IV infusion bags away from ultraviolet light and heat to reduce microplastic shedding. And they say that micron-level filtration systems could be used to remove the particles during infusion. Could. Should. Didn't say that. Plastic dust is polluting the global environment. But how do they enter the atmosphere in the first place? In general, the sources of microplastics, according to Max Planck Gesellschaft, you're welcome, are found on land. For example, fibers from synthetic clothing, in domestic sewage, or car tire dust on the streets. Previous studies have suggested a major pathway for them to enter the atmosphere is through the ocean. Microplastics are washed into rivers and carried out to the sea, where they accumulate. Air bubbles created by the sea spray, wind, and waves can lift them out of the water into the atmosphere. A new study led by researchers from the Max Planck Institute for Meteorology shows that the ocean's role is mainly that of a sink, not a source, as previously thought. Relief? Only a swallow away. Fertilizers that shed microplastics are increasingly spreading on America's cropland. Research shows, according to The Guardian, that raises new worry about the soil contamination and safety of the U.S. food supply, is all. A peer-reviewed University of Missouri paper found common types of controlled-release fertilizers are often encapsulated with plastic and can be so small that they could be considered microplastics. Those are designed to break down into even smaller pieces of plastic once spread in agricultural fields. The tiny bits of plastic can end up in water and soil at alarming levels, the paper's lead author said, and the substance is likely taken up by crops. Until now, controlled-release fertilizers have been thought to be safe. We need to inform the farmers, says Marianne Salehi, lead author of the research. When they choose their products, they need to know, she says, that these have some potential risks. The substance has been found throughout the human body, linked to an increase of cancer and increased risk of cancer and heart attack. It's also considered to be a neurotoxicant that can cause multiple forms of brain dysfunction, such as your Parkinson's or mine. Meanwhile, Scientific American reports that as scientists develop a better idea of where microplastics are accumulating in the environment, they're just beginning to understand how these pollutants affect one of the most essential and widespread kingdoms of life on Earth, your plants. A new study published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences reveals how microplastics hinder photosynthesis across a wide range of plant species, including crucial food crops. It's really scary, says Marcus Erickson, a marine scientist at the Five Gyres Institute. That's a nonprofit plastic pollution research organization who was not involved in the study. The researchers found that the presence of microplastics can reduce photosynthesis by as much as 7 to 12% on average. That could range from 6 to 18% in terrestrial crops, 2 to 12% in marine plants, like your kelp, and 4 to 14% in freshwater algae. The exposure to microplastics was not surprising at all, said Erickson. What surprised me was the level of impact, he said. A generalized reduction in photosynthesis at such a scale could have major implications for the global food supply, according to the researchers. Of course, we could just eat the microplastics directly and spare the food. And, as if all that's not enough, it's not. In a startling discovery, according to Boston University, a team of their researchers found that bacteria exposed to microplastics became resistant to multiple types of antibiotics commonly used to treat infections. They say this is especially concerning for people in high-density, impoverished areas like your refugee settlements, where discarded plastic piles up and bacterial infections spread easily. Studies published in Applied and Environmental Microbiology. I read it for the articles. Quote, the fact that there are microplastics all around us, and even more so in impoverished places where sanitation may be limited, is a striking part of this observation, says a Boston University College of Engineering professor of biomedical engineering. Quote, there is certainly a concern that this could present a higher risk in communities that are disadvantaged and only underscores the need for more vigilance and a deeper insight into microplastic and bacterial interactions, unquote. In a laboratory at BU, researchers rigorously tested how a common bacteria, your E. coli, reacted to being in a closed environment with microplastics. Quote, the plastics provide a surface that the bacteria attach to and colonize, says a PhD candidate in materials science and engineering and lead author of the study. Once attached to any surface, bacteria create a biofilm. That's a sticky substance that acts like a shield. You know, like the one that protects your teeth. Protecting the bacteria from invaders and keeping them affixed securely. Even though bacteria can grow biofilms on any surface, the microplastics supercharged the bacterial biofilm so much that when antibiotics were added to the mix, medicine was unable to penetrate the shield. Biofilms on microplastics compared to other surfaces like glass are much stronger and thicker, like a house with a ton of insulation, says the researcher. It was staggering to see. And the seers were equally staggered. News of microplastics, ladies and gentlemen, just one word. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Dateline Watertown, South Dakota. The Watertown Shamrocks, a team in the North American Hockey League, the NAHL, have issued a strong statement condemning racist behavior by a group of fans during their recent game against the North Iowa Bulls. The organization announced that it had banned the individuals involved from its facilities, issued a sincere apology to the targeted player and the North Iowa Bulls organization. The swift response from the Shamrocks has garnered praise from parents and community members online. The incident occurred during this game match against the North Iowa Bulls. Team officials were alerted to a group of fans making inappropriate and racial remarks directed at a player from the visiting Bulls, identified as Sang-Yub Kim. Officials of the game took swift action, removing the offending fans from the arena. The Shamrock statement expressed gratitude to the game officials. We are very grateful and appreciative of last night's officials for acting quickly. These specific fans have been banned from our facilities. While we're appreciative of the action taken, we're deeply frustrated with the actions from these fans and do not in any way condone this type of behavior. The Watertown Shamrocks would like to sincerely apologize to Sang-Yub Kim and the North Iowa organization for this incident. University of Texas golfer Luke Potter has apologized after he reportedly was removed from the grounds at Sawgrass, TPC Sawgrass, earlier this week for heckling star golfer Rory McIlroy. In a video of the incident spread on social media, McIlroy playing a practice round Tuesday at Sawgrass ahead of this week's Players' Championship, hit a drive on the 18th hole into the water and then immediately turned back, walked over to Potter, standing outside the ropes, asked for his cell phone, took it, and walked away. That's golf talk. It wasn't clear in the video what Potter said, but golf.com reported that he referenced the 2011 Masters when McIlroy melted down on the back nine. Worst place to. Golf.com also reported that Potter was later escorted off the course. His phone was returned. Asked about the incident, Potter told Golf Channel, "Look, I just made a mistake and I take ownership for it. I apologize for it. That's about all that needs to be said. It's just a good learning experience. Yeah, I apologize." Unquote. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer referred to Republicans as bastards on live television before quickly apologizing during a heated discussion over his decision to vote in favor of the GOP's stopgap funding plan to avert a federal shutdown. Schumer, as you know, has faced intense pushback from members of his own party this week, progressives accusing him of capitulating to Republicans on a continuing resolution. Quote, it's much, much better not to be in the middle of a shutdown, which could divert people from the number one issue we have against these bastards, these people, which is not only all these cuts, but they're ruining democracy. Unquote, Schumer on MSNBC's All In. Apparently he was shortly after All Out. Air Canada's apologized after it emerged that some of its flight displayed maps that appeared to have erased Israel. Here we go again. The carrier's Boeing 737 MAX fleet were found to have moving maps, part of the in-flight entertainment system, that did not show Israel as a state but replaced it with the name Palestinian Territories. The maps have been deactivated while they're updated. The discrepancy was first noticed by a passenger. He flagged it to the company. Air Canada said in a statement it was found on 40 of its Boeing 737s. According to the airline's website, there are 43 MAX twin jets in the fleet of the airline. The entertainment item in question had been produced by French aerospace group Thales, while the map itself had been produced for Thales by an external company which has not been named. I'd name it Palestinian Territory Video. Air Canada and Thales said in a joint statement shared with CNN that the issue has been resolved. Quote, it was brought to the attention of Air Canada that the interactive map on its Boeing 737 fleet did not consistently portray certain Middle Eastern boundaries, including those of the State of Israel, at all amplification levels. Air Canada's policy in general is to display only city names on the maps in its aircraft, and the configuration on this particular system was not compliant with this policy. Unquote. Air Canada and Thales apologized for the unease created by this situation. Unquote. And, yes, there's a BBC apology of the week. They're at it again. According to The Guardian, the BBC has issued a full and unreserved apology to four female former employees after admitting it did not do enough to protect them from a local radio presenter who was later jailed for stalking a TV and radio presenter called Jeremy Vine. Alex Belfield, a former host on BBC Radio Leeds, that's with two E's, was sentenced to 5.5 years in prison a couple years ago after being found guilty of waging a stalking campaign against four people, including Vine. The corporation has now said it is deeply sorry to four women who had also been subjected to a campaign of abuse by the self-same Belfield over several years. The four women involved were subjected, according to a judge, to a personal campaign of revenge, leaving them all needing psychological support. Belfield was handed an indefinite restraining order. The BBC said it failed to take earlier warnings from the women seriously enough. Quote, people who work for the BBC are often in the public eye and under scrutiny. However, it is unacceptable for anyone to be the target of sustained abuse in the way that these women were over a number of years. We recognize that before 2019, we simply didn't do enough for these members of staff in understanding the full impact of Alex Belfield's unacceptable behavior had on them. For that, we are deeply sorry and offer a full and unreserved apology. Unquote. They're getting good at this. And over the weekend, 9to5 Google reported that second-generation Chromecast and Chromecast audio devices displayed an untrusted device error message, preventing users from casting audio and video content onto their screens of choice. This week, Google sent an apology email to people affected by the outage, saying it was working to roll out a fix as soon as possible. Quote, we apologize for the issue and understand your frustration. We're working to roll out a fix as soon as possible, and we'll share updates and guidance on the Nest community page. We appreciate your patience as we resolve this issue. The email comes after a Nest community post on Monday told Chromecast owners it was working on a fix. In the meantime, users were advised not to factory reset their devices, since they could come in to more problems resetting them up. And finally, Toronto police have apologized to the Jewish community for a recent podcast episode that discussed a rise in conversions to Islam following the October 7th attack on Israel and its aftermath. Quote, we acknowledge that recent episode of our podcast, Project Olive Branch, has caused significant upset and concern in the Jewish community and beyond. That was not our intention, and we apologize, unquote the Toronto police. The episode featuring two Muslim liaison officers has since been deleted. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now, news of the land of 4,000 princes. Our freedom-loving friends in Saudi Arabia. Not only are they hosting meetings between the United States and Ukraine and maybe Russia, so they're acting as a, you know, neutral party. Forget about the bone saws. But Saudi Arabia's incredibly ambitious plan to transform its country with the NEOM Giga project is costing more than expected. A new report from the Wall Street Journal details how the money being spent is spiraling to an astronomical amount. Covers the entire project, but focuses on its best known section, the 105-mile-long skyscraper city, The Line. Follows concerns raised by a similar Bloomberg report in 2024, which revealed that costs were getting out of control. NEOM's CEO also unexpectedly stepped down recently, and there have been numerous credible reports of human rights abuses. Any bone saws in the vicinity? The Wall Street Journal alleges executives have been accused of fudging the numbers to hide the true cost of the project. The figures are astonishing. The first phase alone is expected to cost $370 billion. Ultimate completion date and budget are now estimated at 2080. I got that on me. Oh, no. And $8.8 trillion, respectively. Another issue raised by the Wall Street Journal is the opening of Sindala. It says it remains unfinished and over budget. The report says Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who is the driving force behind NEOM, is to blame for some of the rising costs, including that his preferences and whims are causing additional headaches. The line, for example, would be a lot easier to realize if it were a little less tall, but the prince refuses to budge on his vision. Similarly, the line will feature an impractical-sounding empty glass building hanging upside down from a steel bridge. This was designed by a Marvel film designer who was brought in because staff knew that the prince liked the movies. We'll be right back. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. Back next week, same time, same radio station, or on your audio device whenever you want it. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego desk, Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans, and Pam Halstead, as always. The email address for this program, ask your dad what that... the chance to get Cars I Talk... Same. And the playlist of the music heard here on, as well as a lot of stuff to watch, listen to, read, ponder, wonder, all at harryshearer.com. I'm on Blue Sky at Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy radio network. So long from Santa Monica, California, the home of the homeless.